Thank you. So yes, today I'm going to talk about the binding and functional characteristics of mouse BSP protein. But first, I'm going to give a small introduction of a binder of sperm proteins. These proteins were first identified in a bovine species, where they represent approximately 60% of the total seminal plasma proteins. These proteins are secreted by seminal vesicles, and they are well characterized. In the bovine species, we find three forms, BSP1, 3, and 5. These three proteins have similar binding properties. They can bind glycosaminoglycans, high and low density lipoproteins, phosphatidylcholine, and sperm membrane. And their main known function is to promote sperm capacitation induced by GAG and HDL. The way it works is that upon ejaculation, the BSP proteins kind of coat the surface of the sperm membranes via an interaction with choline phospholipids. And they protect the sperm from the free movement of the phospholipids inside the membrane. And then they protect the sperm through the whole travel through the female genital tract until it reaches the oviduct, where they interact with GAG and HDL, and it will promote capacitation with the cholesterol efflux. In the last 10 years, BSP proteins have been identified in approximately 20 species, and what they have in common is two fibronectin type 2 domains in tandem, and they have a variable N-terminus and variable C-terminus. More related to my research project is the human and mouse BSPs. They're quite different. They represent a minute quantity of the total seminal plasma protein. They are not expressed in seminal vesicles, but are exclusively expressed in epididymis, and there's traces in human testis. In mouse, there are two BSP proteins, BSPH1 and BSPH2A. Today my talk will be about BSPH1, and in human there is only one protein, BSPH1. Our working hypothesis is that human and mouse BSP homologs are added to sperm during epididymal maturation, and they play a role in sperm function that is similar to bovine BSP proteins. To study our hypothesis, we had to produce a recombinant protein because, as I mentioned, there's really a minute quantity in the seminal plasma, so it's hardly impossible to isolate them in sufficient quantity to assess the function. So to produce the recombinant protein, we used a PET32A vector that added a tyrosine tag for solubility of the protein and IS and S tag for purification. And we used E. coli or Gamma-D3 cells to help with the formation of the disulfide bridges, because as I mentioned, there are two fibronectin domains, so four disulfide bridges. We combined this with a purification method that is a on-column refolding method. So the way it works is that we had a lysis buffer to our cells, sonicate, and then centrifuge and add urea to completely denature the proteins. We centrifuge to remove the cell debris and then pass the supernatant on a ion metal affinity chromatography column. We then wash the impurities with imidazole and use a decreasing linear urea gradient overnight to refold the proteins while they're still bound on the column. And the following day, we elute using imidazole in different concentration. The results obtained for this purification method is that we can find proteins in every different concentration of imidazole used, but the most we find most proteins in the elution using 200 millimolar of imidazole. When you study every fractions of the column on a SDS page, you can see first that our protein is here at 32 kilodalton, which is 18 for the tag and 14 for the BSP protein. If you look at the first fraction, you see an impurity here at 30 kilodalton that we didn't, so that's why we did not use this fraction for further studies, but we used instead the fraction 2 and 3, which are about 98% pure. So the first tests we wanted to do was testing if they had similar binding characteristics. So we tested gelatin and heparin binding using affinity chromatography column. So basically we passed recombinant protein on a gelatin agarose column and eluted with 8 molar urea and found out that approximately 30% of a recombinant protein could bind gelatin. And we did the same thing using a heparin sepharose column and found out that with elution with 1 molar NaCl and 8 molar urea, approximately 98% of the recombinant protein could bind to heparin. We then used ultracentrifugation methods to see if it could bind PC liposome, because as I mentioned, the interaction of the BSP with the sperm membrane is via choline phospholipids. So we took PC liposome incubated with recombinant BSPH1, BSP1 from the bovine species, or a thyrodoxin as control, and then pelleted the liposomes. And as we can see here, the recombinant protein is found in the pellet with the liposomes, just like the bovine BSP, but the thyrodoxin, which does not interact with liposomes, is found in the supernatant. Then we wanted to see if it could bind actually the sperm. So we took spermatozoa from the cauda epididymis, incubated with recombinant protein, and by ultracentrifugation, we could see that our protein is found in the pellet with the spermatozoa. And interestingly, if we took only the sperm without adding any recombinant protein, we could see by immunoblot a band approximately 14 kilodalton also in the pellet, which seems to indicate that the native protein is also found on sperm surface. It was interesting to see that it could bind, but we wanted to know where actually it was binding on the sperm surface. So we did immunodetection using an antibody specific for BSPH1. And it's really faint, the native protein, because there's not a lot of the protein in the seminal plasma or in the epididymis. And so we could see that there is binding over the head and the midpiece region, but we see the signal really more strongly when we incubate with recombinant protein, again, on the acrosome region and the midpiece region of the spermatozoa. Then we started a functional study, and we were testing the capacitation. So we assessed capacitation by the number of sperm that were able to go through acrosome reaction when calcium ionophore was added. So we took epididymal from the cauda epididymis spermatozoa and incubated with different concentrations of recombinant proteins or BSA or thyrodoxin as control. And as you can see, without ionophore, of course, there is no significant changes in the number of acrosome-reacted spermatozoa. But when we add calcium ionophore, you can see that there is a dose-dependent increase in the number of acrosome-reacted spermatozoa with different concentration of recombinant BSPH1, which is similar to what we obtain when we add BSA, which is a capacitating factor. And if we add thyrodoxin, there is no significant change in the number of acrosome reacted. So that suggested that BSPH1 is implicated in capacitation. We then tested to see if adding antibody against BSPH1 could have an effect on the capacitation. So as you can see, without calcium ionophore, again, there is no significant change. So what we did here is we incubated with BSA to induce the capacitation and added anti-RBSPH1 antibody to see if it could lower the capacitation. And when we add calcium ionophore, we again see a dose-dependent decrease inhibition of the acrosome reaction, so of the capacitation. And it nearly reaches the same level as the spermatozoa without any BSA. And if we add normal rabbit serum, we see that there is no inhibition. So these results show that we were able to successfully express and purify the recombinant BSPH1. That similarly to other proteins from the BSP family, they can bind gelatin, heparin, PC, and sperm membrane, and that it shows that it is involved in capacitation but not directly on the acrosome reaction, because without the addition of calcium ionophore, there was no significant changes. The binding studies using the recombinant protein show that it binds the acrosome region and the midpiece regions, so it suggests that it could be also implicated in sperm-egg interaction or sperm motility, but this will have to be tested in the future. So I would like to say thank you to the lab members, the animal care facility at the Maison de Rosemont Hospital, and the funding agencies. Thank you.
Now the floor is open for questions.
Done.
Oops. Thanks for a really nice presentation. I'm guessing that you think you might have a contraceptive target.
Possibly, we'll have to see that in the future.
Right. So I'm just wondering if you've gone to the next step, for example, looking at in vitro fertilization with your bioneutralizing antibody.
We haven't started yet, but we will start in a few months, and we're really eager to see if it will cause an inhibition in the in vitro fertilization. Yes.
And then I guess another obvious experiment, although expensive and time-consuming, would be to knock out BSPH1.
It is an ongoing project. We're beginning to do it right now.
And is there any sense that you might have compensation by that 2A form in the mouse? I guess that wouldn't happen in human because you showed there was just only one form.
Yes. There might be some redundance because of the protein, so that's why we do a double knockout. So we plan on knocking out both genes at the same time. And in human, well, there's only one gene, so this should not be a problem.
Okay, and then I guess the last one, since, again, I'm up here by myself. Are there polymorphisms or mutations in the gene in humans that are associated with infertility?
Yes. Well, genome-wide studies, just like screening the genome, found some mutation in the human genome that caused a complete non-functional proteins. But since it's only genome-wide, we don't really know if there are phenotypes associated with this. So this is something we will work on in the future.
Okay, thank you.
You mentioned that it's incorporated during epididymal maturation, this BSP protein?
Yes.
At what level have you looked at that?
Well, we do know that the protein is expressed in the initial segment and the head of the epididymis. And we do think that it just interacts through the maturation, but we haven't looked exactly at what point we can find a protein on sperm.
So you didn't look at the sperm, you look at the epithelium?
Yes.
Okay. Any other question? Okay, so I will thank you all the speakers this morning, and I will invite you to have the break and the poster sessions.